Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Let's go!
This is the Big E Sports Show
on the Sports Map Radio Network.
From the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's Elissa Walker Campbell.
Hey, Elissa Walker Campbell, welcome in. Sports Map Radio Network, the Big E Sports Show. And indeed, it is a big weekend. Mark it down. We want you to join us every Saturday, 3 to 5 Eastern Time. Connect with us online with our national audience at E-Radio Sports. You can email the show info at eradiosports.com, podcastarena.com. That's where my producer, Luke Mario, uploads each and every one of our interviews. And of course, we make it so easy. You can download our app for the latest sporting news and all the developing stories. That is Sports Map Radio. And we're powered by our good friends at Progressive Insurance. For a job you'll love, visit progressive.com/careers. Well, we're going to lead off the program with Week 7 NFL preview and predictions. And perhaps you're wondering which teams are going to win this weekend. Well, you know what? You have come to the right place. Our next guest, we usually extend an invitation for him to be on the program when we tee it up and we talk some PGA news and notes or highlight his latest book. But Mark Cazzanero is back with us from the New York Post, national sports writer and columnist. We're going to talk some NFL, the Jets and the Giants. Hello, Mark. It's been way too long.
How are you doing today?
Hey, I'm doing great. It's great to have you on the program, and we're going to kick things off, and let's talk about one of the most compelling stories in the NFL, and that, of course, is the Jets. And how about their stunning upset over the Eagles? Just give us your takeaways, and how would you describe this improbable win over Philadelphia?
Yeah, it was a crazy day last Sunday at MetLife Stadium. I mean, I don't think there were a lot of people that expected the Jets to win, and I'm not sure a lot of people thought it was going to be a close game because they, I mean, obviously everybody knows by now that they, you know, they lost Aaron Rodgers on the fourth play of the season in the opener, and the entire, their entire hopes for the 23 season and plans, you know, in terms of building around him was all about Aaron Rodgers. So, you know, that it quickly sabotaged Super Bowl hopes and really seemingly playoff hopes of the Jets. And they've been kind of trying to rebound and recover from that ever since then. And they've been hanging in. And they went into that Philadelphia game down their top two cornerbacks, Sauce Gardner being, you know, their best, not only best quarterback of the team, maybe their best defensive player or best player period on the team. He and DJ Reed had concussions and were out for the game against an Eagles team that's loaded on offense. So it figured to be kind of a long day. And the Jet defense just played spectacular football. I mean, they turned the Eagles over four times. They intercepted Jalen Hurts three times. And it was a pretty spectacular day on defense. The Jets are still a little challenged offensively at the quarterback spot because Zach Wilson is, while making improvements, isn't, you know, he's just not quite there yet. And that's kind of the way the Jets have to win games. But you know, this was probably, you can make an argument this is maybe the best win of the Jets head coach Robert Saleh's you know, short stay there for the last, you know, the last two plus years, because it was, I mean, it was not only was it a big win over a really good team, but it got them to 3-3 entering the bye. Obviously, they're not playing on Sunday tomorrow, you know, they have a chance to kind of reboot a little bit. So yeah, just the entire tenor of the season changed to get to that bye week at 3-3 because they basically, the early part of their schedule was an absolute gauntlet. I mean, they played the Chiefs, who won the Super Bowl. Obviously, the Eagles were Super Bowl runners-up. You know, their first game of the year was against Buffalo and Josh Allen. He's one of the best quarterbacks in the league. So it's been, you know, I mean, I think there were a lot of people that thought, even with Aaron Rodgers healthy, to get to 3-3 with that starting schedule would be an accomplishment. And now they've actually done that without Aaron Rodgers and with Zach Wilson. So there's a lot of hope going into the rest of the season for them after this bye week.
Okay, well, let's segue and let's talk about Aaron Rodgers, because he has declared that he's ahead of schedule after his innovative surgery. Just what is the latest, and do you anticipate that he will return this season?
Yeah, listen, you know, this is a fascinating topic here. Obviously, last Sunday, about 2.5 hours before the Jets-Eagles game, Rodgers was out on the field without crutches, not even really showing much of a limp, yeah, and having a football toss. And I thought the internet was going to break, on a Sunday afternoon.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just, bedlam, and listen, Rodgers is a guy that loves the attention. He absolutely, it's clear that he basks in the attention, and he embraces it, and I respect that. And then he came on Tuesday. He does a regular spot on ESPN, as I'm sure you know, on
yep,
Pat McAfee's show, who he's pals with and also happens to get paid about $1 million a year to do. But he came on there and was spouting off about he's way ahead of schedule, et cetera, et cetera. His goal is to come back around week 14, which is just 14 or so weeks removed from rupturing his Achilles tendon and having surgery 2 days later on September 13th. I actually, on Tuesday, I did a story and spoke to four prominent orthopedic surgeons in the area, one of whom actually had worked and trained under Rodgers' surgeon, Dr. Elitrash. So these guys are some pretty big time surgeons who have operated and do operate on professional athletes. And to a man, these four guys said the vibe I got was it was way too risky for him to come back that soon. And all of them feared him re-rupturing the Achilles, which would make the recovery even more complicated because it would be compromising the tissue and whatnot in that area. So, you know, the bottom line is this. My gut feeling is we're not going to see him play again. What's going to be fascinating, Alyssa, is if the Jets, just say the Jets are in week 14 and they're in the driver's seat for a playoff spot, Rodgers is going to want to be, I mean, that's going to enhance his desire to get out in that field again and roll the dice to the playoffs, and maybe the Jets can, get hot and win a Super Bowl. If they're completely out of the playoff picture, then it makes zero sense for him to even think about coming back, because then you're potentially compromising your entire 2024 season. So I think the dynamic here that's going to be most fascinating to watch is that the Jets are on the cusp of a playoff spot and maybe need to win two out of their last three games. And there's Rodgers, getting cleared by the doctors if he wants to play, giving it a go. So, at the end of the day, my gut feeling is we're not going to see that. I do think the Jets are going to be at least in the mix for a playoff spot later this season, because I just think they've got too much talent around them. That defense, which I mentioned before, and they've got some terrific offensive skill position talent as well. And their quarterback, Zach Wilson, while I'm still not a true believer of, mm-hmm, in, I should say,
yeah,
he has gotten better. You could see it. On the field, just decision making and whatnot. So if he keeps, getting better, then the one scenario that I was having a discussion with somebody the other day about was, which nobody really even thinks about, is what if the Jets are like in the driver's seat and maybe in first place of the AFC East, when Rodgers wants to come back and Zach Wilson's playing really well.
Right.
Then is Robert Saleh going to take this kid out that's led them to an 8-3 or 8-4 record or whatever they may be at that time? I'm just throwing hypotheticals out there.
Yeah, I was going to say.
There's a lot of interesting, fascinating scenario is still, yet to play out here. But my gut feeling is he's not going to play, because I really do believe these doctors I spoke to on Tuesday who just said it's too risky.
National sports writer and columnist with the New York Post, Mark Cazzanero, with us at SportsMap Radio Network, the Big E Sports Show. And, Mark, you have covered the NFL for many, many years. Have you ever seen an athlete return 14 weeks after suffering a ruptured Achilles tendon?
No. No, and nor have these doctors, that I spoke to. The earliest, Cam Akers, Rams running back, came back, I believe, after between 5 and 6 months to play again. That's probably the closest you can get. And Aaron has referenced that, you know, him as an example. But, you know, that's 5 months. You know, 5 months is not 14, 15 weeks. It's difficult to I certainly haven't seen it, and nor have any of the doctors I spoke to. And these doctors have worked with, you know, high class, you know, professional athletes. So, you know, these guys are not, and there's a lot of research that goes into all this stuff. Like one of the doctors I spoke to at New York City Langone, the NYU Langone, you know, said, listen, we go by the data and the facts, and, you know, they go by studies that have been done by the NFL and the NBA, and this guy told me that between 30 and 50% of the athletes that suffer ruptured Achilles never even come back to play again at all. That's a pretty significant number. You know, and this is a guy, Aaron Rodgers, that fancies himself back after 14 to 15 weeks from surgery. So, I mean, I know Rodgers talks a lot about the power of the mind and all that kind of stuff, and I believe in some of that. I really
right,
do.
For sure.
You know, about the will. I'm a believer in that as somebody who's gone through some health things myself, and the power of positive thinking and things like that, I think is real. But, you know, as this doctor from NYU told me, he said, listen, at the end of the day, biology is biology, and you can only push biology so far before it pushes back. And, you know, so we'll see. You know, I mean, nobody really knows what's going on and inside Rogers' left foot and ankle, but, you know, I think we're up for some more drama before the end of this football season when it comes to Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, doctors and surgeons agree it truly would be an exceptional recovery if he is able to make it back. Our NFL news and notes continues with Mark Canizzaro after this quick break.
Listening to the Big E Sports Show on the Sports Map Radio Network. From the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's Elissa Walker-Campbell.
Hey, welcome back. Hour one, Sports Map Radio Network, the Big E Sports Show. Right now, we're going to go inside the huddle with New York Post Mark Canizzaro. Now, just a moment ago, you were talking about Zach Wilson and that he has improved, that he does look better. In your mind, Mark, what stands out the most? I mean, how would you evaluate him at this point in the season?
The things that stand out for me the most, Alyssa, are his decision making in the pocket. I mean, he the last 2 years, obviously, you know, his rookie year he played a bit and he got hurt a little bit. Last year he played decently, had some injury issues, and also just played so poorly that they benched him. And in those periods of time, I just saw a guy that was very, very nervous in the pocket, unsure of himself, in terms of his decision making, and petrified to make a mistake. There's a part to quarterbacking where you just have to let it go.
Yeah.
And this is a guy that's got a really, really live arm, and he can put the ball in places that some quarterbacks can't. And you're starting to see some of those passes now. You know, where you maybe last year you'd see one every 15 passes or whatever. You're seeing them come more frequently now for him. And he made a play in last Sunday's game against the Eagles that stood out to me. There were two plays, actually. It was a two-point conversion pass that he just absolutely just zipped into Randall Cobb in traffic. And that was the go-ahead and game-winning touchdown that the Jets scored. But there was another play that was kind of in the middle of the second half where he was in some duress in the pocket and had Breece Hall, his incredibly talented running back, had kind of slipped out from the line of scrimmage, and he improvised just a shovel pass. It was not a design at all. He just improvised it, and I think Breece got, I don't know, 15, 17 yards out of the play. Those are the kind of things that Aaron Rodgers is so good at, you know, and the quick decision-making and things like that. Rodgers, you know, getting the ball out quick. So So those are things I really, I think that have rubbed off from Aaron Rodgers to Zach Wilson, you know, in the time that Rodgers has been with the Jets, you know, through training camp and whatnot, and, you know, right into the season here, even though Rodgers has been hurt. So I do see those things as big positives, but there's just, you know, the bottom line is Jets are not scoring enough points. They've been really bad in the red zone. And those are things you just can't, you know. I mean, this game probably wouldn't have been as close had the Jets been better. The Eagles game I'm talking about, had the Jets been more proficient in the red zone. You know, they ended up, you know, hurting themselves with some penalties that knocked them out of field goal range and a couple things like that. So those are things they have to kind of clean up. But I do see improvement there. I still am not quite a believer yet, but I do. I respect Zach for the steps he's taken since the last couple of years. I mean, he does look like a better quarterback now than he was the last 2 years.
And let's talk about the Giants. Preview the game tomorrow against the Commanders, 1 o'clock Eastern Time kickoff. The Giants are going to play the Jets next weekend, but the Giants looking to pick up their second win of the season. Can they do it?
I would say that, Alyssa, if they don't do it on Sunday at home against a Commanders team that is, you know, mediocre at best, then this season really is shot. It's probably shot anyway in terms of a playoff chance, but, I mean, this is a game they have to win. Because the Giants, very much like the Jets, played a very difficult first 6 weeks of the season. I mean, they had they're in a stretch right now where 7 out of their first 10 games are on the road. They had a stretch early in the season. I was actually with them where they went to Arizona, played a Sunday game, and then stayed out there out west because they had a Thursday night game against the Niners, which, as you know, are one of the best teams in the league. So they've had a pretty difficult go so far. And you know, last week, they had a chance to really kind of turn their season with a win against the Bills in Buffalo. They were right there to do it. Again, you know, they, like the Jets, they failed on the red zone. They failed actually quite amazingly and dramatically in the red zone with a terrible decision on the part of their quarterback who was backing, you know, their backup quarterback who was in for Daniel Jones.
Right.
Tyrod Taylor, you know, at the end of the first half ended up basically throwing away 3 points by calling a run with no timeouts left and the time ran out. So those kinds of things, when you have the margin for error that's as slim as the Giants, you cannot make those mistakes. And you knew it was going to come back to haunt them. And at the end of the day, it did, because they would have won the game and they had those 3 points, because then they would have just needed a field goal at the end. And you know, they needed a touchdown and didn't get it. So the Giants are a very interesting dynamic because, you know, they achieved success quicker than Brian Daboll, their head coach, and Joe Shane, you know, who also from Buffalo, came from the Bills system. Those guys had no thoughts of making the playoffs last year, and the Giants were playing a fairly weak schedule. Everything went well for them. They won every close game.
Yep.
And they slipped into the playoffs with a 9-7-1 record and beat a Vikings team that I thought was, I always am kind of a non-believer in the Vikings and Kirk Cousins personally. So I, yes, they beat the Vikings on the road in the playoffs in the wild card game, but I didn't think, here nor there, it was a great accomplishment. But what happened there was, it ratcheted up the expectation of the Giants fans thinking they're going to take another step better this year, when in fact they really weren't as good as they appeared last year. You know, these guys, you know, Shane and Daboll took over a roster with a lot of flaws last year, and it was the beginning of their build last year. And you know, what concerns me this year is not necessarily the losses, but the way they've lost some of these games. I mean, 40-0 to Dallas in the first game of the year. You know, they got absolutely smoked, you know, by San Francisco. You know, they've gotten ripped by a couple, three teams now, and that's not a good look. It's not just losing games. But I thought the Buffalo game last week was a real step forward, even though they lost. So, spinning back to what your original question, you know, about, you know, tomorrow's game against Washington, you can't go play the game against one of the better teams in the league in Buffalo, and where you probably should have won, and then come home and lose to Washington, especially because You're 1-5. This is now a division game. If you have any prayer of staying even within touching distance of a playoff spot, you've got to win your division games, especially against a team that's, you know, not that good. So, but again, the Giants aren't that good either. So the Giants, I believe, are actually underdogs at home. So, by a thin margin. But yeah, I think that this is a game they should and they could and should win. And if they don't, then we're really spiraling.
Hey, we are winding down our time. New York Post national sports writer and columnist Mark Cannizzaro, our very special guest here in Hour 1, Sports Map Radio Network, the Big East Sports Show. And let's set aside the game for tomorrow, but talk about the future of Daniel Jones. What does it hold, and perhaps at what point do the Giants decide to pull the plug on him? Because, unfortunately, he's not had a great year. I know he's got the neck injury, too.
Okay, so first of all, that $40 million contract that he signed was essentially it wasn't really 4 years. It was really a 2 year. They can get out of it after 2 years. So, in other words, after next season, they could be out of it. So, let's just say hypothetically, the Giants really spiral to oblivion and they end up winning two, three, four games or whatever, and they've got a super high draft pick, and they really like one of those quarterbacks coming out. Well, they damn well are going to go off one of those quarterbacks, and they'll either just cut bait with Jones or they keep him around for another year. You know, maybe they try to keep him starting, whatever. I'm not sure how that's going to play out. You know, I expected a lot of, I really expected a big jump from Jones this year. Now, his grade isn't complete because, you know, he didn't play, obviously, last week with the neck injury. This week, you know, he's still been complaining of the neck not being quite right. I'm not 100% sure he's going to play on Sunday. It's possible he won't. But even the time he has played, I haven't seen that kind of jump that I thought we were going to get. I'm not saying he was going to be, you know, Josh Allen, you know, which Dable had such a big role in helping develop in Buffalo, but I thought he was going to be better than a guy that was going to throw 12 or 15 touchdown passes like he did last year, which you just can't win football games that way in this passing league the way it is now. So, you know, I don't really know. Nobody has a crystal ball, but I think if things go really bad this year, I think that, you know, where the point where the Giants will have a chance at one of these top quarterbacks, you know, the kid from USC or Washington or whatever, then you might see them go that direction. I always felt that contract they signed him to last year, they were kind of backed into a corner to do, Alyssa, because they did go to the playoffs. He stopped turning the ball over, which was a big deal for him. And you thought he was going to develop, you know, better. So in a way, the Giants were kind of forced into giving him that money. But again, as these NFL contracts go, it really is more of a 2 year deal. So they can get out of it after next year. And that may well be, you know, the direction we're headed.
Hey, Giants Commanders, MetLife Stadium tomorrow, 1:00 Eastern time on Fox. Good stuff. National sports writer, columnist, New York Post. Check him out. That is Mark Cannizzaro. What a great way to kick off our weekend's program. Enjoy all the action tomorrow. Thanks, Mark.
Good talking to you, Alyssa.
You bet. Stick around. Much more coming your way here in Hour 1, Sports Map Radio Network. We will be right back.
The Big E Sports Show continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. From the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's Elissa Walker-Campbell.
Hey, Elissa Walker-Campbell, welcome back. Hour 1, Sports Map Radio Network, the Big E Sports Show, powered by our good friends at Progressive Insurance. For a job you'll love, visit progressive.com/careers. Well, it is hard to believe it is already week 8 in the college football season, and things are starting to heat up as we are at the midpoint. And thrilled to have back with us from CBS Sports Network, their football analyst, our favorite Texas Longhorn, and that is the great Brian Jones, who hopefully has recovered after that beatdown by Oklahoma, that late touchdown from Dylan Gabriel, which was, I have to say, Brian, it was a little cathartic for me after last year's shutout from Texas. How are you?
Well, Big E, always a pleasure to be with you.
Thank
but
you.
No, I have not recovered, and you know it takes 364 days to recover from a loss to your arch rival.
It's crazy. So just talk to me. I mean, Brian, what is it about this rivalry that no matter what the records are, it just always delivers? It's so compelling to watch.
Well, I was telling your fellow Sooner and my longtime business partner, Kenyon Rashid,
we were conversing
prior to the matchup. I said, Kenyon, you know, it does not matter what either team, how they have looked, how they have played, what their record is. It doesn't matter when you show up in Dallas. Throw all that out the window. And once again, that's what transpired. Oklahoma came to play, and I think my Longhorns are expecting the team that they beat down 49-0 the previous year because they didn't come out the gates playing physical. Obviously, the three turnovers didn't help. And that last drive, just give the whole game, give it up to Dylan Gabriel. He found the running lanes, career-high rushing. He was exceptional. The Sooners were the more physical team. That being said, my Horns, as poorly as they played, still had an opportunity to win during the waning seconds. But they don't give you trophies for almost winning. They give you trophies for winning. So you have to tip your hat off to Jeff Lebby. He called one heck of a game, Biggie. Yep. He had that Texas defense dazed and confused. He had them out of sorts. And so they were the better team. And Brent Venables and Ted Roof, the defensive coordinator, you know, they dialed up some different looks. And that's what happens in those ball games. You have to adjust. I've been in many where you expect one thing and the opposing team comes out running some looks that you you had no idea that they had in their repertoire. And you have to adjust on the fly. And hopefully there's a rematch, as we had a few years back where Texas won during the season and then in the Big 12 championship, Oklahoma got them. So hopefully there's a rematch in this bad boy.
You know, I just wonder, I mean, Brian, what were your expectations leading into that game? Because just to be honest and transparent, I mean, I was feeling some major anxiety. I did not know how this was going to play out because Texas truly is. I mean, they're loaded at every position. And, of course, that scar tissue from, as I was talking about, that 49-0 shutout.
Yep. Well, my expectations were Texas has this. They're the better team. And as I said a moment ago, that doesn't matter in this ball game. I played in two of them as a Longhorn, and we were never favored in either one, but we found a way to win. And so watching the game film up to that, to the matchup, I'm looking at this and I'm like, Texas got this. The Texas team that showed up in Tuscaloosa the second game of the season, if they show up, if they make an appearance, they've got this. But that's not what transpired. So my expectations were Texas would win. I wasn't overly confident. I wasn't cocky. I just thought they were the better team. If they played up to their standard, they could win this ball game. And once again, the more physical team was Oklahoma, and that's why they won the ball game. The more physical, disciplined team was Oklahoma, reason why they got the W.
Hey, CBS Sports college football analyst, proud Texas Longhorn, Brian Jones with us at SportsMap Radio Network. And I want to hear about Texas as far as how the season has played out. You talk about that huge road win at Alabama. They're ranked eighth nationally right now. But what have you personally learned through the first 7 weeks of the season?
Well, there was some concern after the first ball game versus Rice, but they shored that up on the offensive line when they went to Tuscaloosa. Defensively, the guys have been flying around. Some concerns with the back end. Now Jalen Catalan, who's been injured, the transfer safety from Arkansas. We'll see how that progresses. But I felt as though this was a team that had leaders. They had beef on the offensive and defensive lines. I had an opportunity to go to a practice right before the season commenced, and I was blown away seeing everything in person. I tell you what has really surprised me is the young man, you know, Jonathan Brooks, the way he's run the rock. That guy has been phenomenal, and he did his part in the OU ball game. So that's a breath of fresh air, especially losing a talent such as Bijan Robinson. So everything is there. They have stubbed their toe, as they did in the Oklahoma game, in the red zone over the last few weeks leading up to that Red River rivalry, and that came to fruition once again. So they need to do better in the red zone. And other than that, they played some pretty good football. So I thought this was a team that should be favored to win the Big 12, still has an opportunity to win the Big 12. They just need to go out and play more disciplined football.
I want to hear a little bit about, as far as Steve Sarkisian, just how he has built Texas into a college football playoff contender. I know, Brian, you've been on the show many times. You've been patient for many years.
Well, it starts with the recruiting. And as I said a moment ago, I went to a practice back in August, and they looked the part. And me working at CBS and being on the sideline of these SEC games, and we know the epicenter of college football is there in the SEC, Georgia now. Prior to that, it was Bama that was ruling the roost. So seeing those guys up close and personal, I get to identify what championship football looks like. And Texas looks the part. They have enough mass on the offensive line, on the defensive line to compete. And so hats off to Coach Sark and his staff for going out and recruiting as well as they have. Since he's been there, they've been at least top five, top three recruiting classes. So that's what it is. He's gone out and he's gotten the requisite ingredients to rebuild this program. And so that's why they're in a position now to challenge for a Big 12 championship and hopefully for a national championship. Mm-hmm. So that's where it starts. You got to go out and you got to recruit. You hope pick and choose a few transfer guys to fill some voids, but they have such a talented locker room. Now it's just about going out and executing.
You know, Brian, it's interesting you talk about the depth with the offensive line, the defensive line, but what about with the quarterback position? How are they keeping all these guys happy? Because they want reps.
Well, they do, but they understand if they can learn under Steve Sarkisian, who's coached some of the best who are now playing at the next level. I mean, you got Jalen Hurts, you got a Bryce Young, you got all these guys that at the receiver position that Sark had a hand in developing when he was at Alabama.
Yeah.
So if he could preach that and say, hey, just look at my track record and go further back to USC, what he and Lane Kiffin were able to do there, the guy knows something about offense. So why would you want to move if you got an opportunity to sit there and learn from one of the best in college football, and that could help your prospects of playing at the next level. And nowadays, it just takes a year or two at the most to show out on the field and then, you know, ascend to the next level. So I think that's why. And Austin's not a bad place to hang out, BB.
Yeah.
Come on. You can hang out in Austin. Name some cities that are better than Austin. It's a great place to just chill for, you know, 4 or 5 years or 3 to 4 years. So I think that's why.
Well, Texas, of course, as we're talking about, juggling three quarterbacks. So you think that's what the message is right now to Arch Manning, for him to just be patient, that he's going to get his time, he's going to get his shot?
Yes, be patient. And listen, I transferred from UCLA.
That's right, you did.
It had nothing to do with UCLA. My heart longed to be a Longhorn, and you know, we need a longer show to discuss why I transferred, but at that time, the Southwest Conference was just in shambles.
Yeah.
Everyone was being investigated. SMU just gotten a death penalty, and while I had a fabulous time out in L.A. my 2 years, I wanted to be a Longhorn. I came back when the program wasn't doing so well. So that's why I transferred. A lot of these kids these days are just impatient, and they think the grass is greener on the other side. Sometimes the weeds are much deeper. So just bide your time and learn. And here's the other thing. We learned as youngins, you don't leave a job until you have another job.
Amen.
In hand, right? So a lot of these kids are languishing, I should say, there in the transfer portal. And Arch is going to be fine. He gets to learn from one of the best offensive minds in the game. He's in no hurry to go anywhere. Malik Murphy, who's the backup quarterback.
Yeah.
He's an excellent talent.
Yes.
This guy's a big dual threat guy. And I he could have bolted after Arch Manning said, I'm coming to Texas, but he didn't. So kudos to those guys. Say, hey, I'm going to stake it out here. I chose this place for a reason, and we've turned it around, and I want to continue to help Texas right the ship.
Hey, Brian, you know, the grass is always greener on the other side, but it's still got to be mowed, right?
Right. There you go.
Hey, my final question for you, Brian. Texas, Oklahoma will join the SEC in 2024. Just what is your level of excitement about them making this huge crossover?
I think they can compete.
Uh-huh.
You know, the conference has been somewhat top-heavy. The West is really deep this year. You know, Alabama obviously is the only one unscathed in conference on the West side right now. We know what Georgia's doing on the East side, and I don't think they're really going to have any challenges. But I think they're going to be fine. Texas has built this team from the inside out. That's what you have to do in the trenches. Look at Oklahoma. They're doing the same thing. We'll see what happens once Dylan Gabriel, you know, takes his game to the next level. So who's going to be under center? But Brent Venables has beaten big bad Alabama twice as a defensive coordinator at Clemson in the national title game. So he knows what's at stake and what needs to happen from a recruiting standpoint to play in that league week in and week out.
Good stuff. Simply the best CBS Sports college football analyst. Check him out. And that is Brian Jones. Always a true pleasure. Thank you, Brian. Have a great weekend.
You got it. Appreciate you, Big E.
You bet. Stick around. Much more coming your way. The fastest 2 hours in radio, Sports Map Radio Network. We will be right back after this quick break.
is the Big E Sports Show on the Sports Map Radio Network. From the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's Elissa Walker-Campbell.
Welcome back, Sports Map Radio Network, the Big E Sports Show. It is week 7 of the NFL. Our coverage does continue. Right now, we're going to focus our attention on Sunday's matchup with the Broncos and the Packers as both of these teams look to avoid a 3-game losing streak when they meet tomorrow at Mile High Stadium. Back with us from Compass Media, he also provides NFL coverage on Westwood One, and that is Bill Rozinski. This is always an exciting time of year for you. How are you, Bill?
Alyssa, I am wonderful. Yeah, I mix a little golf in with football, and actually going over to Germany in November for the 2 games over there. So it's going to be an exciting couple of weeks here.
Absolutely. Well, let's lead off and talk about the Packers and the Broncos tomorrow. Denver, I cannot believe this. They are looking to get their first win at home this season. They're 0-3 at Mile High Stadium. So just kind of, let's look under the hood. Help us understand why they have struggled so mightily this year.
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with their defense. You know, people focus on Russell Wilson, and I think Wilson, when you look at his numbers compared to other quarterbacks in the National Football League this year, it's not bad. I mean, he's played okay. But their defense this year has been pretty much atrocious. Now, a lot of it had to do with Miami putting 70 on them a few weeks ago. But right now they're last in scoring, last against the run. They are last in total defense and 30th against the pass, and they're pretty bad on first down, ranked 30th. So a lot of the Broncos' issues can be, you can look at their defense for that. And I'm not sure why, because, they spent a lot of money on some free agents. They've got some veterans. And based on what's been going on there with Sean Payton, they're starting to get rid of players. And it's just been a big mess. So I think that's one reason the Broncos are looking for their second win. And then, on offense, their receivers just really haven't stepped up like we thought they would. The running game's been okay, and they've got a healthy Javonte Williams again. So we'll see how they play tomorrow against the Green Bay team that, trying to find itself as well.
So what's your confidence level that the Broncos and quarterback Russell Wilson, that they can flip the script, that they can somehow turn this season around? Come on, Bill.
Maybe a 20% chance. I don't know. I mean, look at the Broncos.
Yeah.
Okay, after this game, they have to play the Chiefs again. Now, they did play the Chiefs tough. They only gave up 19 points, and that was a good sign for their defense. But then they have a bye week, and then they have to go to Buffalo and play the Bills. So this is like a really big game for them if they can, put one in the win column. And then, they will host the Chiefs and then go to Buffalo. So then they got the Vikings after that, the Browns. So nothing's easy. But so you look at that schedule, I'm not all that optimistic.
Yeah.
They're going to turn this around. But we'll find out. A lot will be answered on Sunday.
Hey, Compass Media, Westwood One, Bill Rozinski joining us at Sports Map Radio Network, the Big E Sports Show. Typically, Bill's on our program. We're always talking a little PGA Tour, but our focus in this conversation is on the NFL Week 7. And I just want your evaluation. You've already talked about defensively, what's going on with the Broncos, but just your evaluation of Russell Wilson through the first 6 weeks. I mean, how would you grade him?
I think I'd give him a B+. I mean, he's thrown for 1,300 yards, 12 touchdowns. The interceptions are, he's thrown 4 picks. It was a lot worse a year ago. But the problem was when Sean Payton went after Nathaniel Hackett in the preseason, when training camp started and he did that interview, with SI, it might have been with USA Today, I'm not sure. But anyway, he went on and ripped Nathaniel Hackett for the coaching job he did and came in. And I will say this, Russell got his way when he got to Denver. He had his own office up in the the second floor. All that stuff went on. He had his own people. I mean, that's, Sean Payton made sure that didn't happen. But all in all, I think there's been so much pressure on Wilson because of what Sean Payton had to say about Nathaniel Hackett. But again, you look at the numbers, and they're not too bad. Now, sadly, they gave up a boatload to Seattle to get Russell Wilson. 5 picks, 2 first-rounders. I mean, nobody's worth that. I don't even know why you make that call, but, it's not the first time somebody's made a boneheaded decision in the National Football League in the front office. So, again, to answer your question, I think Russell's played okay. Has he been as good as he was when he was taking Seattle to a couple of Super Bowls? I don't think that's there. but he's been consistent. You know, last week he against Kansas City just hit 59% of his passes, but it's been 65% through the season. So again, he's been good enough to win. They just have problem is because of their defense, they've had to score a lot of points.
So Bill, you'll give him a B plus. You know, here Russell Wilson, he's in his second season with the Broncos since the trade to acquire him. It just seems like Bronco fans, I mean, they're highly critical of him, and it has not gone according to plan. I'm a little bit surprised. I thought things would work out for him a little bit better since coming from Seattle.
Yeah, and it's always the quarterback, right? But again, you know, you got to point some fingers at the defense. You know, you're not in the film room. You're not breaking it down to figure out what did the receiver run the right route? You know, what's going on when plays don't work? So, you know, he's been in a tough spot, but, you know, it's a spot he put himself in when they make that trade and, you know, did the things he did last year to kind of alienate himself from some of his teammates. You know, I thought that he had a Hall of Fame numbers up until going to Denver. And I don't know if the rest of his career will ruin that opportunity to get into Canton, but I would think what he did at Seattle and the numbers he put up and the success he had certainly had him eligible for Hall of Fame votes.
Bill Rosinski with us a few more minutes. Sports Map Radio Network, the Big E Sports Show. We've hit on the Broncos. Let's move ahead and talk about the Packers. And what do we need to know? I mean, how have they looked through the first 6 weeks? I mean, obviously no longer having and losing Aaron Rodgers. That was a huge hole to fill.
Yeah, it was. And the big difference between, and I think, you know, Brett Favre had some veteran receivers, including Greg Jennings when he took over. Aaron Rodgers had some veteran receivers to throw to, and that's not been the case for Jordan Love. And let's also remember that Aaron Jones, top running back, who is supposed to play tomorrow, has been out with an injury. I think he got hurt in the Falcons game. I can't remember where he got hurt, but or it might have been the Lions game. But anyway, he's supposedly going to be back in the lineup to help with the running game, and any young quarterback needs a running game so they can set up play action and have some success. But, you know, Christian Watson, a wide receiver, only in his second year. Jaden Reed's a rookie out of Michigan State. In fact, they got a couple of rookies on the team. Wicks is out of Virginia. Heath hasn't played at all. But and then you've got Toure, and the veteran is the second-year pro from Nevada, Romeo Doubs. So, I mean, you look at this receiving core, and they're all young pups. And now you got the rookie quarterback. So, well, not rookie, but obviously he's been sitting waiting for his chance, but his first year to start. And I think that's why you have problems on offense.
Hey, Bill Rosinski has been with us, Sports Map Radio Network, the Big E Sports Show. It's hard to believe Matt LaFleur is in his fifth season. Just your evaluation of him, and keep those Packer fans, they still got to believe, right?
Yes, they do. And it's like we're going to evaluate him like we have Belichick, and obviously that evaluation has gone very well. After Tom Brady left, how good? What was it? The head coach, or was it the quarterback? And obviously, he took over, and he had Aaron Rodgers. They did fail to win playoff games. I mean, they had great regular seasons. I think 10-win seasons since he got there, but really couldn't finish the deal in the postseason. So I think we're going to find out now over these next few years. And I don't know if they stick with Jordan Love or not. I'm not sure, but we're gonna judge Matt LaFleur more closely now on how this team develops and future teams. I mean, they're 2-3. As you mentioned at the outset, they're on a losing streak. So somebody's trying to break a losing streak. So, you know, we'll see. Like I said, with Aaron Rodgers, it's one thing, just like Tom Brady with Belichick, and we'll see how the next few years pan out for Matt LaFleur with a different quarterback.
Hey, Packers, Broncos meet tomorrow in a battle between two slumping but well-rested teams. He's going to be on the call. That is Bill Rosinski. Kickoff set for 3:25 time on CBS Mile High Stadium. And as you mentioned, too, you're going to be packing your bags. You're going to be going to Germany. What teams are you going to be covering over there, Bill?
The first game we have is Miami and Kansas City. I mean, that's going to be, you know, a great matchup. Now, we'll find out a little bit about the Dolphins tomorrow because they're on the road against Philly. But you've got Miami and Kansas City, and then we're just going to hang around. It's in Frankfurt, Germany. And then the next game is Colts-Patriots. I would guess the game of the first half of the season might be that Kansas City-Miami game. And then, you know, you got the Colts and Patriots trying to figure things out.
Hey, as we close out the interview, you've got to give a shout-out and congratulations to your grandson, Andrew Rosinski, what he committed to UNC, and he's going to play for Mack Brown. How exciting. And what's it like being a grandparent? They say it's just even more amazing than being a parent. I'm like, how can this be possible? Like, talk to me, Bill.
You know, he has worked really hard for this, and thank you for mentioning this, Alyssa. Mm-hmm. He's like 6'6", weighs about 285.
Wow.
And Mack Brown won him over. He had offers from Georgia Tech and Mississippi State and other schools, and they went to visit Mac Brown, and all of a sudden Mac won the family over. So he's actually going to he's a senior in high school. He's going to graduate in December, and he will be on campus and hopefully going to some bowl game with the team in January. He's an offensive tackle. He's gotten good reviews from the people who scout high school football, and deep down, I think he's got an opportunity to play on Sundays, but we got to get through this high school season first and then see how he does in college. But the family's, he's worked really hard for this, and we're just delighted for him.
6'6", 285. He's a four-star offensive tackle. Andrew Rozinski, watch for that name. Bill, true pleasure. Always appreciate you carving out some time. Safe travels, and we'll talk to you again real soon.
Thanks, Alyssa. My goal, if he plays at North Carolina, is to do one of his games.
That's right.
Thanks, Alyssa, anytime.
You bet. Stick around. Much more coming your way. Sports Map Radio Network.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.